Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today we're looking at something that's, well, universal, completely fundamental, necessary even, but it's often ignored or maybe even treated with a bit of fear. We're talking about blood.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, we're diving into Rose George's really compelling investigation, Nine Pints, Blood's Social and Political Life.
It's a fascinating title.
It is, right. We all have about, you know, nine pints of this stuff running through us. That's where the name comes from. But like I said, this isn't really an anatomy lesson.
No.
George argues that this vital fluid, it acts like a powerful, complex mirror. It reflects our deepest societal achievements, but also, and this is critical, our failures too.
Yeah, and what's so interesting about her approach, I think, is how she really elevates blood. It goes from being just this clinical substance to something fundamentally, well, political.
Political, exactly. The core idea she puts forward is that by looking closely at how we handle blood, how we process it, fear it, sometimes commercialize it, distribute it, you know, who gives it, who sells it, who gets it, we uncover some pretty profound truths.
Often uncomfortable truths, it sounds like.
Often uncomfortable, yeah. Truths about global inequality, about ethics, about social justice.
So our goal today is to kind of get past the squeamishness, maybe?
Definitely.
And really try to understand what this essential, often hidden fluid actually reveals about us as a species.
Yeah.
Moving beyond the hospital ward into, like, global commerce and culture.
Right. And it forces you to see public health differently, not just as a doctor's concern, but as a real public policy responsibility, something we all have a stake in.
Let's talk about the author, Rose George. She's a remarkable British journalist, but she's not a doctor, right? Not a hematologist.
Correct. And that's actually her strength.
Okay. How so?
Well, her niche is investigating subjects that we tend to overlook. Things that are maybe mundane or taboo, things that are absolutely fundamental to how we live, but just stay invisible.
Right. I remember her previous book. She wrote The Big Necessity, which was all about sanitation, another invisible world.
Exactly. And deep sea and foreign going about global shipping.
Ah, yes. Also largely unseen.
She has this incredible knack for taking a topic that seems dense or maybe off-putting and making it immediately human, totally relevant.
So that outsider position is key.
I think so, yeah. It makes her perspective really distinctive. She's this empathetic, really tenacious reporter asking the kind of simple but big questions, questions maybe the medical community stops asking because, you know, the answer seems settled.
And her insights aren't just from reading studies.
Oh, definitely not. Her authority comes from really rigorous on-the-ground reporting. She didn't just sit in a library. She traveled everywhere, visited voluntary blood banks in South Africa, paid plasma donation centers right there on the U.S.-Mexico border. She weaves together the science, the history, the politics, but does it for a general audience, for us.
That makes sense. Now, the book itself, Nine Pints. The structure sounds clever.
It is.
Nine thematic chapters or pints mirroring the volume in the body.
Precisely. And the journey it takes you on is quite something.
It goes from the personal to the global, right? I heard she starts with her own experience.
Yeah, she opens by discussing her own battle with premenstrual dysphoric disorder, PMDD. Which is a severe cyclical mood condition linked to the menstrual cycle.
Wow, okay. That's quite personal.
It is. And it immediately grounds the discussion. It establishes that blood, on some level, it's always a story about vulnerability, about identity, about how our bodies intersect with our lives.
And from there, it broadens out.
Massively. It broadens out to tackle this central ethical fault line that really runs through the whole book. Should blood and its components like plasma be treated as a selfless gift, you know, an altruistic bond within a community? Or should it be a marketable commodity? Driven by supply and demand like any other product.
The gift versus the trade.
Exactly. And that choice, George argues, dictates everything. The safety, the availability, the whole morality of the blood supply chain.
So the book covers a lot of ground then.
It really does. Everything from the global shame surrounding menstruation to the ongoing quest for artificial blood, the contamination scandals. It's all viewed through this lens of how it exposes global health inequality.
Okay, let's dig into some of those pints. You mentioned menstruation. That's the first pint.
Yes, and okay. She argues really powerfully that this isn't just some, you know, minor inconvenience or cultural quirk.
Right.
Menstrual shame, the taboos around it, are actually a massive ongoing barrier, a barrier to gender equality, to health, to education for women and girls worldwide. It's fundamentally an issue of dignity.
She must use some powerful examples.
Oh, yeah. Startling examples. You read about practices like Charpadi in Nepal.
I've heard of that. Isn't that where women are banished during their period?
That's right. Banished to isolated, sometimes really dangerous huts or sheds, and sometimes with fatal consequences, snake bites, smoke inhalation.
Oh my God.
But she balances that with inspiring stories too, like the work of Arunachal Murugantham in India. They call him the menstrual man.
Ah, the low-cost sanitary pad machine guy.
That's him. He pioneered the development of these machines, making hygiene products accessible across India. It's innovation born from necessity and empathy.
So starting with menstruation immediately sets up this theme of value and dignity.
Exactly. And it forces us, especially in the West, to think about how we value blood. And she pivots right from that biological dignity to the economic dignity, or lack thereof, in donation systems.
Contrasting the second pint, the gift, with the third pint, the trade.
Precisely. The gift is rooted in the ideas of Richard Titmuss. He wrote this influential book back in 1970, and he argued that a purely voluntary, altruistic blood donation system, like the UK's National Health Service model, is inherently safer and morally superior.
Safer because the motive isn't money.
Right. The idea is you trust the blood more because the person giving it isn't doing it out of, say, economic desperation. It fosters social solidarity, a gift from one stranger to another.
But then you have the trade.
Then you have the trade. And this is the huge multi-billion dollar global plasma industry. It's for profit, and it's overwhelmingly dominated by the U.S.
Those plasma centers you see everywhere.
Yep. If you drive around, especially in lower income areas, you see them. And George really investigates who sells their plasma there.
And it's most.
It's nearly always the economically vulnerable, people needing cash quickly, students, the unemployed, people working low wage jobs.
And the ethical problem there is?
It's stark. The biological material they sell, their plasma, gets processed into these incredibly high-priced life-saving medicines.
Medicines they probably couldn't afford themselves.
Exactly. Medicines the original donors could likely never afford to buy back. So it raises this profound question about exploiting poverty to fuel high-end medicine. It draws that line between a gift and a commodity purely in dollars and cents.
And that commercial drive, you mentioned it led to tragedy. The fourth pint, contamination.
Yeah, this chapter's, it's chilling. It's a real indictment of the system. George details how, particularly in the 1970s and 80s, the intense drive for volume, for profit, meant some companies were sourcing blood and plasma from high-risk populations.
Like who?
Prisoners, intravenous drug users, often paying them directly for it, not screening adequately.
Oh, wow.
And crucially, the practice of pooling. They would mix plasma from hundreds, sometimes thousands of donors together in these huge vats to extract things like clotting factors more efficiently.
Which sounds efficient, but risky.
Incredibly risky. It created a perfect viral multiplier. If one sample was contaminated with, say, HIV or hepatitis C, which were emerging then.
Contaminated the whole batch.
The whole massive batch. And this is how these viruses spread globally through blood products, infecting thousands upon thousands of people, particularly hemophiliacs, who absolutely relied on those clotting factor treatments derived from pooled plasma.
That's horrifying. A massive systemic failure.
Absolutely. And a profound lesson in regulatory failure, in what happens when profit completely overrides safety concerns.
So where does she go from there? You mentioned South Africa, the fifth pint.
Right. She uses South Africa as this really important case study. It shows how a nation's blood system is just inextricably linked to its social history.
In South Africa's case, apartheid.
Yeah. The blood supply was literally segregated during apartheid. And the country continues to grapple with major public health crises, particularly the high prevalence of HIV.
But it's not all bleak.
No, it's also a story of incredible resilience. She highlights the work of the South African National Blood Service, the SNBS, and these amazing individuals she calls blood activists, people fighting stigma, working tirelessly to recruit safe, voluntary donors in a really challenging environment.
That's quite a journey. Did you say something about leeches?
Yes, the sixth pint. It feels like a complete detour, right?
Yeah,
leeches.
Definitely sounds medieval.
That's what I thought too. But George explains they're actually making a comeback in very specific areas of modern medicine.
Like what?
Microsurgery. Particularly for things like reattaching severed fingers or skin grafts.
Seriously, how do they help?
It's all in their saliva. It contains this incredibly potent cocktail of anticoagulants and vasodilators. It helps restore blood flow to tiny, damaged vessels much better than anything else we have. It's this weird, fascinating blend of ancient practice and cutting-edge surgery.
Wow. Okay, that's unexpected. And the future. Artificial blood. That's the seventh pint.
Yeah, the quest for a viable artificial blood substitute. It's been going on for decades. Billions of dollars poured into research.
No breakthrough yet.
Not really, no. Successfully replicating the sheer complexity and efficiency of the red blood cell, its ability to carry oxygen, squeeze through tiny capillaries, last for months, it remains one of the toughest challenges in medical science. The holy grail of transfusion medicine, some call it.
So if we zoom out from these specific points, what are the big overarching themes George wants us to take away?
Well, the first one, and it's probably the most central, is that blood is fundamentally a social and political substance.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
It means that decisions about blood, who's allowed to donate, who's excluded, whether we allow it to be bought and sold, who gets priority for transfusions, these aren't just medical or technical decisions.
They're political choices.
They are absolutely political choices with real life or death consequences. And understanding that means we have to view blood safety, blood availability, not just as a doctor's problem, but as a public policy responsibility. It needs constant citizen vigilance.
Got it. What's another key theme?
The enduring power of taboo. This comes up strongly with menstruation, obviously, but also around diseases like HIV.
How so?
Ancient fears, cultural squeamishness, stigma, especially around menstruation. They create these really significant, tangible barriers. Barriers to basic human dignity, to education for girls, to economic participation for women all over the world.
And breaking that silence matters.
It's essential. George frames it as an act of social justice, that shame isn't harmless. It actively damages lives. So destigmatizing these topics in our own communities, in schools, globally, it's crucial work.
Okay. And a third theme?
The blood gap and global inequality. This is stark. Access to safe, adequate blood supplies is something people in wealthy nations just take for granted, mostly.
Right. You assume it's there if you need it.
So you do. But in many developing countries, it's a critical, life-threatening problem. There just isn't enough safe blood. And this contributes directly to much higher rates of maternal mortality, for example. Women bleeding to death during childbirth simply because there's no blood for transfusion.
That's devastating.
It is. And the point George makes is that this isn't just their problem. The health of one country's blood supply impacts the global supply chain. Potentially, disease spread, our sense of shared human security. Inequality in blood access is fundamentally inequality in the chance to live.
George really has a way with words, doesn't she? You mentioned her ability to crystallize ideas.
Yeah, she does. Some lines really stick with you. We pulled out a few key ideas that kind of capture the essence.
Okay, let's hear them.
All right, idea one really highlights that cultural paradox around menstruation. Menstrual blood is the only blood that is not shed from violence, yet it is the one that disgusts us the most.
Wow. That really makes you stop and think, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How perception just overrides biology.
Completely. Then idea two gets right to the heart of that ethical debate about plasma. The line between a life-saving medicine and a simple commodity is drawn in plasma.
It perfectly sums up that moral tightrope walk, turning biology into business.
Exactly. And finally, this one captures that Titmus philosophy, the importance of altruism. In a pint of donated blood, there is a gift of life, but also a story of a society's belief in itself and in strangers.
That's beautiful, actually. It reframes donation not just as a medical act, but as a social act, an act of trust.
Precisely. A statement about the kind of society we want to be.
So thinking about all this,
yeah,
how can we apply these insights? What are the practical takeaways for you listening?
Well, application one is probably the most direct. If you're able, become a blood donor or a plasma donor.
Right. George helps reframe it, doesn't she?
She really does. Moving past the maybe initial squeamishness or fear of needles, by understanding it as this profound act of civic participation, pure altruism in action.
Okay, what else?
Application two, on the community level, support efforts to destigmatize menstruation. This could mean advocating for free sanitary products in schools or workplaces, or simply educating yourself and others about the global reality of period poverty and stigma.
Challenging that silence we talked about.
Exactly. That silence has real costs. And application three is about critical thinking. Be a more aware consumer, maybe.
How so?
Use this knowledge to ask questions about healthcare supply chains. especially for those expensive medicines derived from plasma. Think about where they come from, who provided the raw material, and the economic system behind it.
Just fostering awareness of those hidden connections.
Yeah. And finally, application 4 is vigilance. Learn from history. That contaminated blood scandal is a powerful, tragic lesson.
The public health systems aren't infallible.
Not at all. They're fragile. They require constant oversight, constant engagement from citizens demanding accountability and transparency from the companies and regulators managing these essential, life-giving resources.
For me, the biggest takeaway was just astonishment, really, how George managed to take this topic, blood, which seems kind of clinical, maybe even gruesome, and transform it into this deeply humane, compelling exploration of justice, inequality, and society.
Yep.
My aha moment was realizing the sheer scale of the logistical effort, the constant vigilance that goes into just keeping the blood supply safe day in, day out, something we completely rely on but rarely think about.
Absolutely. And my final thought, sort of building on that, is how clearly this book shows that the systems we design, whether it's for blood or water or energy, they are the ultimate reflection of our societal values.
What we prioritize.
What we prioritize, exactly. Our capacity for altruism versus our tendency towards exploitation, our commitment to equality. George's book is really a powerful call for us to recognize and embrace a sense of shared responsibility for these hidden vital systems.
So it leaves us with a question to ponder.
Yeah. The book suggests that if we learn to read blood's story, its history, its biology, its ethics, its economics, we learn something profound about ourselves, about our society. So the question for you is, what aspect of our societal values do you think needs the most urgent transfusion of change?
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.